I'll be honest with you. What I've seen from this defense so far is that they're athletic. And I talked to Donovan Newsom about this, the starting Sam linebacker for Mizzou yesterday. He talked about the athleticism that they've got at the linebacker position specifically.
I think that's really accurate because you got some people with speed. You got some people who know the plays and know their assignments, which they can coach you up on the field. You got people who can cover. Like Clarence Green, he can cover. So we got all different types of weapons out there.
So that was Donovan Newsom on his role and on the linebackers that they've got right now. This defense looks really athletic. Like, you don't have to watch them in one-on-ones or to watch them in 11-on-11s. You can tell just by looking at them and just by watching them in, like, even special teams drills. It's so obvious. The defense is so much more athletic than I've ever seen, really, from a defense at MU. And I think that's going to be huge for this team this year. One thing that we noticed last year with the defense, and God bless him, but the linebackers last year were not athletic enough. They just weren't. I mean, you had against Auburn, the linebackers couldn't get to the holes quick enough. We just didn't have the athleticism on the Mizzou defense, or we didn't see it like we will this year. And I think that's going to be huge. I think one thing that we've seen in the SEC, everything is bigger, faster, stronger. And last year, Mizzou's team was bigger, faster, and stronger than they were in 2012. And it paid off for them in a huge way. And I think going into this season, they're even bigger, they're even faster, and they're much stronger than they were in 2013. Now, will that pay off with a 11-2 season like it did last year? I don't know. I don't know if that's exactly what we're going to see. I mean, I don't think anybody can truly predict exactly what this team's going to be until we get closer to the season and until we see at least one game on the field. But I think if you just go based upon the roster alone, these guys have the talent. These guys have the athleticism. They're strong enough to make a difference. One guy that I mentioned earlier, Charles Harris, he's going to quickly become a fan favorite. I talked with him about his expectations for himself yesterday after practice. This is what he had to say.
What are your expectations for yourself going into this year?
Expectations. I'll be the best player I can possibly contribute as much as I possibly can. Fill the role, no drop off from the ones to the twos. That's how I feel. No drop off at all. No type of production points, nothing dropping off at all.
So that's Charles Harris yesterday. I also asked him about, or the media in general asked him, what are we getting from Charles Harris? Because very few people know who this guy is. He's going to be with the number twos. He's a redshirt freshman. He was a late offer. And actually, he talked about the amount of offers that he had before he came to Mizzou. I thought this was really interesting. Listen to the teams that had offered him before Mizzou got into his recruitment late into the season.
Missouri Western, Northern Iowa, Penn State, I believe. But a lot of D2, NAIA schools.
NAIA schools, Pitt State, Missouri Western, and Northern Iowa. Those were the teams in on Charles Harris before Mizzou offered him. And now, he's the number two defensive end. And if you know anything about Mizzou football, you know that he's going to get a ton of playing time this year because that's just how the defense works here at the University of Missouri. He also talked about what fans can expect from him yesterday after practice.
I take a lot of pride. I take it as an honor. You know, I take it as something I'm not going to take advantage of. I'm not going to misuse. I'm not going to abuse my position right now. I'm not going to take it for granted and not be humble with it and be arrogant about where I'm at right now. I'm going to keep working hard. I'm not going to change at all. I'm going to be the same Charles Harris from the day I walked in here to tell y'all leave.
Charles Harris, by the way, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, he's quickly going to become a fan favorite. This is a guy that's honest. He's candid with the media. He's interesting. His backstory is incredible. He didn't even start playing football until his junior year in high school.
Never went to a football camp. Never went to a football, anything, combine, no type of drill thing, nothing. I started my junior year, only played high school football. That's it. Never played Pop Warner when I was younger, none of that.
So that's Charles Harris yesterday after practice. And the reason that I play all that audio for you, and the reason that I'm talking about Charles Harris when you've got guys like Shane Ray and Marcus Golden and Matt Hoke and Lucas Vincent and Harold Brantley, you have a ton of guys coming back on the defensive line specifically, but on the defense in general even, I think he's one of the keys to Mizzou being good this year. I think he's one of the keys to the defense not taking a step back from where they were last year. And I think a lot of people would say that the offense was better than the defense last year, but the defense had to keep this team in games. The defense had to at least hold teams within 24 points or so. and you felt good about the offense scoring more than the opposing team, if the defense could just keep the opposition from scoring 28 or more, if they can do that, you felt pretty good about your odds of winning. And I think Charles Harris being that number two defensive end behind Marcus Golden is a huge key to that, because Marcus Golden's going to get a lot of playing time this year. I think the starting defensive ends are going to play more than Michael Sam and Coney Ealy did last year. I think that's safe to say, but they're still going to come out of games quite a bit. If last year they were playing like 65-35 or 60-40, I think this year it'll be like 70-30. I don't think it's going to be that big of a difference. So Charles Harris is going to be playing like 30% of the snaps this year. And if it's a huge decrease in the production from the number one unit to the number two unit, that's going to be problematic. Because we already know coming into this year, the DBs are a question mark. We already know coming into this year, the linebackers are going to be young. The one team that, or the one unit that this defense can hang their hat on is that the defensive line is going to be great. Not good, not above average, not a solid college defensive line. They're going to be great. They have to be great for this team to be as good as they expect to be. You've got four guys on the starters returning with a ton of playing time last year. Whether you want to call Shane Ray and Marcus Golden starters or not, that's up to you. But they have a ton of playing experience in the SEC, a ton of production in the SEC. You've got two backup defensive tackles returning this year that have a ton of playing experience. And then you have Marcus Loud on one side, who's a redshirt freshman, and Charles Harris on the other side, a redshirt freshman as well, and they've got to step up. I believe that those two guys in the athleticism of this team overall on the defensive side of the football, it's the key to them being as good as they believe that they can be. I spoke yesterday with Shane Ray as well, and we'll get into my one-on-one with him here in just a little bit. I talked to him about Charles Harris and Marcus Loud after practice. This is what he had to say about the young guys.
Looking at those guys, you know, they remind me of myself. My redshirt freshman year, you know, having to play next to, you know, Sheldon, Coney, and Mike and all those guys and just taking in that experience. And I think they're doing an excellent job at just understanding, you know, their roles this year, you know, how big and important, you know, that they're going to be and that they're needed. And just from an evaluation standpoint, is just seeing what they do every day. I mean, those two, they work hard. They're putting in extra work. They put in extra work in the offseason. You know, they're being coachable, and I think definitely just all that hard work is going to pay off for those guys, and it's going to carry on to the field, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do this year.
So Shane Ray seems to agree with me. He believes that their role is huge, and I think one of the reasons why he believes that is because he was in that role just 2 years ago. Last year, he took a step forward. He's going to take another step forward, or at least Mizzou fans hope, this season. These guys are young, they're athletic, they're hungry. Charles Harris specifically, I haven't spoken with Marcus Loud yet, but Charles Harris is humble. There's a lot to like about this defensive line. There's a lot to like about this team, and there's a lot to like about the defense, surprisingly. I thought I was going to come out of fall camp being like, you know what, guys, I don't know about this defense. I don't know what to expect from this team. But I feel pretty good about who they have. And I think the most important factor going into the season is just that there's not that huge drop-off between the ones and the twos on the defensive line. And I don't believe that there's going to be. Coming up next, the Royals, a half game out of the playoffs. But are they for real? I feel like we've been talking about this for a month now. We'll get into the latest answer to that question next here on the Morning Blitz on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM.
Will swing and loop it into shallow right. That'll drop for a base hit. Into play is Peralta. Here comes Gordon around third. Here's the throw. Head first slide. Safe. An RBI single for Mike Moustakas. And the Royals retake the lead. It's 3-2.
That is Steve Stewart on the Royals radio network yesterday. The Royals pick up another W. They win 4-3 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. Look, it's not a huge feat to beat the Diamondbacks. By the way, coming up at 8:45, Mizzou audio, a ton of one-on-ones. I've got Connor McGovern, Sean Colkin, and Charles Harris, all one-on-ones, all coming up to you here on the Morning Blitz coming up at 8:45. But right now, as I said, the Royals pick up another W. They have now won 11 of 14, and all of a sudden, I know I came on here 3 weeks ago, and it was all but left for dead. I was done with this team. It was over. I didn't believe that they were a playoff team. I came on here with the statistics after 100 games into the season, teams that were under 500 had made the playoffs four times in the modern era. And of those four times, three of them were the division winners. And the Royals didn't have a chance at the division at that point. I still don't believe that they have a chance at the division now, but the wild card really does seem possible. I mean, as I said, a half game out, a half game behind Toronto for the American League wild card. This team just keeps on winning, and they've got another game tonight against Arizona, which should be a win. You've got Guthrie on the mound. By the way, last night, you had Ventura on the mound, and he was just incredible. Six innings, gave up eight hits, but only two earned runs, struck out eight, walked only one. And you get to Herrera, you get to Wade Davis, you get to Greg Holland, and it just like clockwork, the Royals find a way to make it happen, and I'm in. I think that I'm done doubting this team. And look, the Royals are clearly a flawed baseball team. They are clearly not a great team. That's evident just by watching a game. They struggle to score runs, even though they scored 12 runs just two nights ago. In general, they struggle to score runs. They're 19th in the league in runs scored this year. They're 19th in on-base percentage. Their slugging percentage has gone up a little bit. They're 23rd, though, so, I mean, nothing to be too happy about. They're just not a great offensive team. I mean, Alcides Escobar has the best average on the team at .277. They don't have a single 300 hitter on the squad. So they struggle to score runs, but, I mean, at the end of the day, the pitching's been great. The bullpen's been outstanding, and they're six games above .500, 112 games into the year. You've got 50 games remaining. You're a half game out of the wild card. I mean, how much more can Royals fans really ask for at this point? I know it's an all-in year. I know that you'd like to be closer than 3.5 games back of Detroit for the American League Central. I know there's a lot that Royals fans want from this team, but realistically, you're not going to get most of that. I said earlier this week that this stretch of August is huge for the Royals' chances of making the playoffs. So far in this stretch, they've gone 4-1 against the A's and the Diamondbacks. They've got San Francisco coming up. San Francisco, by the way, is on a losing tear right now, the opposite of what the A's had been before the Royals went into Oakland. They've got the A's once again after San Francisco. And then the schedule opens up again. Minnesota, Colorado, Texas, who might be the worst team in baseball, a quick one-game series against the Yankees for a makeup game. And then you've got six against division opponents in the Twins and Indians. And down the stretch, you've got six more against Detroit to try to make up a couple games in the division. Now, I don't think that the division's winnable for the Royals. I don't think that that's going to be in play here, but the playoffs are in play. The playoffs are a realistic possibility. If you get Billy Butler, who, by the way, over the course of the last month is hitting like .300 with a .350 on base percentage, he's got his average back up to .275. Gordon back up to .275 as well. Lorenzo Cain still hitting about .300. You've got guys on this team that are getting back to their career numbers. You've got guys on this team that are getting back to where you expected them to be. At some point over the next few weeks, the Royals expect to have Eric Hosmer back as well. This is a team that could go on a run. And I told you on this radio show, I didn't believe that they had it in them. I didn't believe that this was a team that could make the playoffs. But as I look across the rest of the wild card and the rest of the teams in contention against the Royals, they're all flawed teams. They all have reasons why they shouldn't make the playoffs. Seattle is a year or two ahead of where they expected to be. They're a game back or half game back from the Royals. The Yankees, they don't have the pitching right now. CC Sabathia is down. Tanaka's down. They don't have the pitching that you need in order to make this late run to make it in the playoffs. I don't believe that the Indians are a serious contender, and everybody behind them is more than five games back from the Royals. So basically what you're battling against, or what I believe it to be, is the Blue Jays and the Royals. I think that is the race right now. Even if Seattle and the Yankees are a game back of Toronto as well and only a half game back of the Royals, I don't think that they're the ones that the Royals need to worry about. It really does just come down to the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays have a great offense, an outstanding offense. But the pitching has been shaky at times. The pitching isn't as great as people would like a playoff team's pitching staff to be. Mark Burley's their best pitcher right now. He's got a 3.3 ERA. The Royals can beat these teams. The Royals can make the playoffs. And this is coming from a guy that told you 3 weeks ago it was over. The Royals couldn't do it. But the Royals pitching has proved that if you have guys like Duffy, like Ventura, like Guthrie, like Shields, who's been outstanding lately, and you get back Vargas here very soon, I think you get him back this weekend, you can go on a run. You can be a team that defies logic, that defies what you've seen from playoff teams over the course of the last 25 years. 100 games into the year, the Royals under 500. Every other team that's been at that point, 100 games into the season, only 4 of them made the playoffs. 3 of them won the division, and 1 of them made the wild card. The Royals would just become the second team in the modern era to make the wild card. So I know how unlikely it really is. But the Royals are making it seem possible. Am I crazy for believing this? I want to hear from you guys on Twitter, at BK Sports Talk. You can text me, 573-882-8262. I think one of the things that I love about sports is that you go through these emotions. You go through the ups and downs of the wins and the losses. You go through this roller coaster of emotions. And no sport is more evident of that than baseball, because it is such a long season. And so if you're not all in on this team, if you're not completely bought in at this point, what's it going to take for you to buy in? Because I wasn't in. I was totally out of this about 3 weeks ago now. But I'm back on board, and I'm back to this every day is a roller coaster of emotion, and this every day is something different from this team. And this, I truly believe. I am a believer in what the Royals have been able to do over the last 2 weeks. I'm a believer in what the Royals can do over the next 3.5 weeks. Maybe that makes me crazy. Maybe that makes me somebody that is just asking to get my heart crushed once again by this Royals team. It's all very possible. It's all very likely, probably. But it's something that I haven't been able to experience with the Royals in my life outside of last year, when it seemed like for a little while they had a realistic chance of making the playoffs. But let's be honest, they never really did. So I'm going to buy in. I'm going to be a believer for a little while. I'm going to let the cynic in me take a step back. I'm going to make the believer in me take a step forward. And I think Royals fans should do the same, because you just never know when you're going to have another chance at a team like this. You just never know when the team's going to be in contention 120 games into the year. You just don't, especially not with the Royals. So while you have it, jump on board. Take a stab at it. Just be a believer for a little while. Give them until the end of August. If they're still in it, then September, I promise you, it's going to be a ton of fun for Royals fans to experience. Coming up next, what role does fear have in sports? What role does fear have in making rules that dictate the way that sports are played? I think it has a huge role in it, and I think we saw that yesterday. I'll explain next on the Morning Blitz on KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz. I am Brandon Kiley on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, one-on-ones with Connor McGovern, Sean Colkin, and Charles Harris of the Mizzou football team. I talked to all of them yesterday. I'll bring those to you here in about 10 minutes or so. But right now, what role does fear play in, I guess, sports, but also in life in general? Because I cover the right to farm amendment that passed on Tuesday night, and that's the reason why I wasn't here yesterday. I was up until about 4 a.m. Working on that. By the way, my work, you can find apparently on, you can find it on KBIA.com, but you can also find it on Esquire.com. I don't know how that happened, but Esquire magazine like quoted my story in one of their stories. So that was pretty cool. But I was covering this Right to Farm initiative, and it just kind of reminded me like what role fear plays in life in general. And it pertains to sports as well, because think of all the rules that have come into play just because we're scared something's going to happen. Like, we protect the quarterback in football because we're scared that the stars of the sport are going to go down for 6 weeks at a time. We protect the receivers because we want the offense to have the numbers because we're scared that viewers are going to stop tuning into football games, even though there's no evidence that viewers actually tune out of football games at any point. That we're protecting the concussion laws because we're scared of the long-term ramifications. And that's not to say, hey, any of this is good or bad, but it just is. Like, it just happens. And this year, we're looking at more holding calls from the defensive backs in football once again because the NFL seems to be afraid of not having enough scoring, even though last year was the highest scoring season ever. You look at just the unnecessary roughness calls that we see, the hits to a defenseless receiver. It's the same thing in baseball with the catcher contact rule. You saw it in the Marlins game about a week ago. There was a ruling where the player was safe, even though he shouldn't have been safe because of the new rules that were put into place. But the only reason those rules are actually in place is because Buster Posey was hurt in a big game and baseball didn't want to see that happen to its stars. And it came to the forefront once again yesterday with the coach of the San Antonio Spurs that was hired. She is a female, and she is the first ever female coach to actually be hired. Her last name's Hammond. And it just, the stories that I was reading about it were stories about what if players don't accept her? What if it becomes a distraction? It was similar to all the stories that I read about Michael Sam and how he was going to change the locker room culture. He wasn't going to fit in. Guys wouldn't accept him. And it was just kind of odd to me that we're reading about all this stuff and it's all fear-mongering, basically. We're basing all of this stuff on narratives and beliefs of what could happen instead of what actually does happen. Like, the Right to Farm initiative, and I'm not saying whether I'm for or against it, but the reason that it was put in place is because people were scared that things could happen. Now, those things maybe would, but probably wouldn't ever take place. And it was the same thing with Amendment 5 that passed in Missouri with the gun laws. Missourians are scared that the government's going to take away their guns. And whether they actually would lose those guns or not, I mean, who knows? But that's why the amendment passed, is because Missourians were afraid. And it's the same reason why most NBA teams wouldn't have felt comfortable hiring a female coach, is because they're afraid of the backlash from players, from the media, from the fans. They just don't know how others would respond to it. And I'm reading these stories and I'm like, guys, nobody cares. Like, San Antonio's going to be fine. It's a world-class organization. They hired a female coach. Like, they didn't bring in some unqualified person. They brought in a woman that's been playing in the NBA for 17 years. Like, there are guys that are coaching teams that have never played basketball before. So I don't know why we're so concerned about a 17-year WNBA veteran coming in and coaching. It just seems really weird. And it just reminded me that fear plays such a big role. Like, a lot of people, if I ask people right now, is America safer today or was it safer 30 years ago? Most of you would probably answer that it was safer 30 years ago, but that's just not accurate. Crime rates have actually gone down over the last 30 years, steadily. Steadily, crime has decreased in America. The amount of violent crime that takes place today as opposed to the amount of violent crime that took place 30 years ago, it's actually decreased. Most people would disagree with that, but facts say that it has decreased. The reason why you believe otherwise is because you're reading more about it. You're seeing more about it. It's in the news more because it sells. So it's one of those things where what we believe, what our perception is actually very different than what the reality is. By the way, a little breaking news right here. Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports says that Cleveland has an agreement to acquire Kevin Love, including a contract commitment from Kevin Love. Once he does go to the Cleveland Cavaliers, he will sign a 5-year, $120 million plus contract extension with the Cavaliers. The Cavs will give up Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett along with a protected 2015 first-round draft pick. That according, of course, to Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports. I wanted to get that in there real quick. So getting back to the story, we just have these fears, and our fears are based on our perceptions of reality, and they're not actually based upon anything real. They're not based upon anything that's driven by facts. We take out our money from stocks because we're afraid of it plummeting. We do make all these decisions in life because we are scared of things. And some of the things, it's a good thing that we are afraid of. It's a good thing that we are afraid of jumping off a 3,000-foot cliff into a lake because, let's be honest here, the motivation behind that is just fear. Like, there's nothing good that's going to come from that except for a little bit of an adrenaline rush. Like, there's nothing great that's going to come out of that. But with a female coach, maybe you're about to hire somebody that you can see being your head coach here 3 years down the road. Greg Popovich, not exactly the youngest guy in the NBA. You're going to need somebody to take over from him. And if we've learned anything from the San Antonio Spurs, it's that they know how to groom coaches. Look around the NBA right now. There's 3, 4, 5 head coaches that started their careers with the San Antonio Spurs. So Becky Hammond, the woman that the San Antonio Spurs hired yesterday, I have no reason to believe that she's not qualified. I have no reason to believe that she won't be a complete success story in the NBA. I have no reason to believe any of that. And yet, based on what I've heard, based on what I've been reading, based upon what people are saying, people are afraid. People are afraid of what this could mean. And it's the same thing with people being afraid of catchers getting hurt. It's the same thing with people being afraid of viewers tuning out of their football games. I just don't think it's reality. I don't think the perception matches what we've actually seen. It's just really weird. And ESPN talked about this yesterday and the social impacts that this hire could have for you. Here's the audio from yesterday on ESPN.
It's still going to be a difficult thing, I think, you know, to see a lot of women go into this profession because it's highly competitive and because, you know, it's still something I think that they have to fight through a lot of barriers. What I would say is it's not going to open the floodgates. It's definitely going to open a window.
And I think that's so important. I think it's hugely important. It's the same thing that I said with Michael Sam. Look, maybe Michael is not a great NFL player. Maybe Michael never becomes the player that a lot of people want him to be. But maybe he opens the window. Maybe he opens the door for that great gay NFL player to come out and to be comfortable with his sexuality and to be comfortable with being a gay NFL player. Maybe it opens the window for more gay high schoolers to come out to their teams and to feel comfortable, and maybe it loosens them up a little bit and they become the next star recruit. Who knows? We just don't know what's coming. But we see it with the pace of play in college football right now. Coaches are scared. They're scared that their way of winning, Nick Saban's way of winning, Brett Bielema's way of winning, is going to the wayside. We see it with a woman coach. We see it with the concussion settlements. We see it with holding calls in the NFL that are going to be prosecuted more than ever this season. We see it with the unnecessary roughness calls in the NFL. We see it with the catcher contact rule in baseball now. It's all about perception. It's all about what viewers seem to believe as opposed to the reality of it. And all of this is just driven by fear. It's all driven by people being afraid of something. And it just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Coming up next, I want to get into the Mizzou audio that I have from yesterday and some of the one-on-ones that I had with some of the keys to this year, in my opinion. Connor McGovern, Sean Colkin, and Charles Harris, all three of which I believe are the keys to the Mizzou football season. I'll explain why that is next on the Morning Blitz on KCOU 88.1 FM. Also, you can hear from all three of them right here on the Morning Blitz. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. I'm Brandon Kiley. You can follow me on Twitter at BK Sports Talk. You can follow the show at the Morning Blitz. You can also get involved on our text line, 573-882-8262 is the number to do so. If you've missed anything from the show today, you can always catch that after the show or at any time. TheMorningBlitz.Podomatic.com is the place to find all of that. So I've been at Mizzou's practices all week. I've been talking to the players. I've been getting some one-on-one interviews for you guys. I talked to the man that I believe could be the key to this offense this year yesterday, Sean Colkin. I talked to him in a one-on-one. Here's what Sean Colkin, your starting tight end, had to say yesterday after practice.
How's Jason Reese look out there? He's doing great. All the tight ends are doing great job, I think, so far in the first 2 days. But, yeah, Jason, you know, the last, I think, spring, he had a little back thing, so that kind of, like, you know, hurt him a little bit and, like, running full speed and everything. You can see that kind of, and he was just in pain. But he's healthy now, so you can see it. And it's like night and day almost, you know, how he's doing. So we're really excited about him.
Are you guys working more with the receiver groups or in individual, or are you working more with the offensive linemen this year?
So far, I think we've been more with the receivers, but I think tomorrow we'll throw a line a lot. And, you know, they're going to move us back and forth, you know, 50-50 probably, if I had to say.
Is there any receivers, since you've been with them, that have stood out, the young guys in particular?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Keon was doing good before he got hurt. But, you know, Nate Brown's doing a great job, Deshaun and Lawrence and, you know, pretty much all of them. You know, I think Thomas, you know, I mean, everyone's doing a great job. So.
The offense last year was a lot of spread it out, get it to the three guys. Do you feel like you're going to need more guys to step up? Is it going to take more than just three guys to fill in and plug and pull?
Yeah, I mean, you always have that one predominant receiver that you probably like try to target, but I think this year at the team, you know, we got a lot. You know, the Mizzou's always had a ton of receivers and tight ends that can make plays, and the depth seems pretty good this year. I think we'll establish a very good TD team this year, and possibly three. We're gonna travel a lot, and I think it's gonna be a good year.
So that was Sean Colkin yesterday at practice, my one-on-one interview that I had with Sean Colkin. So here's the reason why I think he's so important to this team. Because in the past, we've seen that they've had, and I mentioned it with him there, they've had three guys, basically, that they believe that they can get the ball to at any point in time, and they feel comfortable with those players. Last year, it was Doriel Green-Beckham. They had Marcus Lucas, and then obviously LaDainian Washington, who was their big play threat. And they've had that for the last few years now, really dating as far back as I can remember with Gary Pinkel's teams. This year, it's a little different. This year, I mean, you have those three guys and Bud Sasser, Jimmy Hunt, and Darius White. Those are your three top-end wide receivers, but none of them are the same caliber of players as, say, a Doriel Green-Beckham. You don't have that true number one guy like they've had in the past. And I've seen at practice, they're working a lot of guys in. You've got Jamon Moore, who's a really young guy. He's a sophomore this year, a redshirt freshman, but sophomore in terms of his schooling. You also have a couple tight ends, and Jason Reese, who I asked him about, and Sean Colkin, who could really add a wrinkle to this offense. And then now you have Marcus Murphy working in with the receivers as well, as along with some of the really young guys, including Nate Brown, who could potentially have a big impact on the year on this team as well. But if those tight ends can become a threat in this offense, all of a sudden you have a 6'6 guy in Sean Colkin who can be a huge threat in the red zone. And that's where this team could really use the tight ends to step up. That's where this team, I believe, needs to get the tight ends more involved. That's one of the things from last year that I didn't like, is that they didn't get Eric Waters a little bit more involved in the passing game. I think they're going to try to do that. I think they're going to make a true effort to get Sean Colkin involved. And I think that it could really pay off for them going forward I also spoke yesterday at practice with Connor McGovern, the Mizzou offensive lineman. He expects to have a good year this year. He's a little hurt right now, though. We talked a little bit about that with him.
How do you guys feel about the depth out there right now? Do you feel pretty deep along
the
line?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we're injury-free pretty much, except for my little minor thing. So, yeah, we feel great. Everyone's playing really well. So, yeah, we have good depth this year. It's just keeping everyone stay healthy, and it'll be good.
You guys returned three starters from last year's offensive line. How is that working together? Do you feel pretty good or feel more comfortable because you have so many guys coming back?
Yeah, we do feel really comfortable, and we kind of got the three anchors out there. So it's nice with Evan and Mitch. I have a year experience. Evan has two, and Mitch is like three pretty much. So, it's really nice. So we definitely helping the new guys, and I mean we've helped. Anthony Gotti has a lot of playing experience, so it's almost returning four stars because he started games and he knows what it's like on a Saturday. And I mean Mitch was right there last year, so it's not like we're bringing in anyone that's 100% new and greenhorn. So we should be good.
I know Fairchild got a decent amount of reps yesterday. How's he look out there so far?
He's good. Good, definitely good for true freshman. His technique's great. Everything's good. Just get that year under him and beef him up a little bit, and he'll be a damn good player. So
you guys look bigger this year. Like, you look like a stronger offensive line than in the past. Was there a big emphasis put on that in the offseason?
Yeah, starting on last year we did a really good job, but the difference between last year and this year is last year we all didn't have the exact same schedule in the summertime, so we weren't all lifting together. Like, all five of us pretty much were lifting together, and so, I mean, it was us and then Matt Hoke and stuff. And so we really got after it this summer. And I think lifting together and all doing the same stuff really helped us as well.
Does that help with camaraderie as well?
Yeah. Granted, I think, I don't know if you can get a closer line than this. I know we've said that last year and this year, and that helps with that. But definitely because we put, not only were we running together, but we were lifting together. So everyone knows how hard everybody worked. So you're not guessing what the guy in the morning, that guy that lifted in the morning did, because you all lifted together. So
how difficult is that transition out to the offensive tackle? What are the big challenges for you right now?
Definitely the speed aspect of, you know, the guys are so much faster. I was definitely lucky, and I had to, or lucky and how you want to look at it, but I had to play against, I had to start my tackle against Marcus Golden, who, I mean, preseason all conference, all that stuff, he's going to make a run at All-American, and he's just a great player. And I mean, that, it was a struggle at start because, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing out there very well, and my technique wasn't right, so he was just smoking me. But I felt like I got accumulated faster just because of the guy I was going against, you know, and he would give me pointers and help me out a lot. So he was a great training partner, and he helped me a lot, so.
You guys go against him every day. How do you feel like this year's defensive line compares with last year? Do you think they can be as good?
Yeah, I think they can be as good. I mean, our tackles have another year of experience, so inside they'll be even tougher, and then, I mean, our ends, they played almost as many snaps as the other guys, you know, so they're experienced. They didn't have a starter label next to them, but they're pretty much starters, and they could definitely play at any other school. Last year, we just had such good players, but they'll be just as good, and I mean, they're fast, so not only are they strong, but they might not have the same size as Coney and Mike, but they're fast, so.
That was Connor McGovern, my conversation with him yesterday after practice. He looks huge. He was basically the way he got hurt, and he's one of two guys that are going to be limited up until the scrimmage. I think it's next Tuesday is when that first scrimmage is for Mizzou. He was benching 495 pounds for his max out, and he kind of tweaked his pec. So yeah, it sounds as painful as I'm sure it was for him, but I believe that this offensive line is going to be about as good of a unit as Mizzou has anywhere. They have three returning starters, Connor McGovern, Mitch Morse, and Evan Bame. And the two guys that they're putting at the guard positions both have enough experience to where I don't feel like there's going to be a huge drop-off from last year. This offensive line I feel really good about. I said yesterday on the big show on KTGR that I truly believe they could have one of the better offensive lines in all of the SEC, and I know that's kind of like sacrilegious to say when you've got Alabama and Auburn that are obviously always going to have great offensive lines, but I feel really good about the offensive line going into this season. I also spoke with Shane Ray, the starting defensive end for Mizzou, yesterday after practice as well, and you heard Connor McGovern mention it there. This defensive line should be so good. I mentioned it earlier today on the show how I believe that Charles Harris could be one of the keys to the defensive line and to the defense's success. Shane Ray is going to be a big part of that as well. Here's my conversation with Shane Ray.
You guys have a lot of depth at defensive tackle this year, more so than I've seen in the past. Does that make your job a little easier on the outside?
Definitely, definitely. You got guys like Harold Brantley, Lucas Vincent, Matt Hogue, Josh Augusta, and I could keep on naming the list. Each one of those guys, I look at it as the kind of rotation we had at defensive end last year, you know, being able to rotate fresh guys in and out. And I just think that, you know, with the kind of talent that our defensive tackles have, they're going to command a lot of double teams, and it's going to definitely take a lot of pressure off of me and Marcus to be able to get freed up and get one-on-ones.
You're not quite as deep at DN this year. At least it doesn't look like it from the outside looking in. Does that make does that put a little bit more pressure on you guys to play more than the front line guys did last year?
Honestly, you know, me and Marcus are just prepared to do whatever we have to do. You know, if we have to be on the field, we will. But we got great young football players coming up like Charles Harris and Marcus Lau. So I think they'll be there to definitely, you know, help us out, you know, when we need to get a break and we're going to be effective.
So that is Shane Ray yesterday after practice. He didn't give you a ton there, but what I do think he gave you is an honest answer about the defensive tackles. That rotation that they have, they go two or three deep at both of the defensive tackle positions, and they should be really good there. But more importantly, they should be really fresh at basically all times. And I leave all these practices and I say to myself, like, why can't this team win 10 games going into this season? Why can't this team repeat the success that they had last year? Because I think last year, if you just look at what we saw going into the season, if you look at what our true expectations were for this team going into the year, I think quarterback was a huge question because a lot of us didn't believe in James Franklin after the year that he had in his junior season. Running back, not so much of a question, but we did have questions about whether or not Henry Josie would come back as good as he was before the injury. I don't know if he was quite as good, but he put those questions to rest pretty quickly. The receivers were obviously going to be great. We had questions about the offensive line. We had questions about the defensive line. I know it doesn't seem that way now, or it doesn't seem like we should have. Now, but we didn't really question Coney Ealy. We did question Michael Siem. We didn't really know what Mizzou had in Michael Siem going into last season. And then the defensive backs outside of EJ Gaines, we didn't really know what was going to be there. And linebacker, we felt like was going to be a strength, but going into the year, it actually ended up not being one of the strengths of this team. So there's going to be some things that we miss on with this team going into the year. But overall, like, if you had to put a list of your biggest question marks going into the year, for me, I think clearly number one is wide receiver. But I'm not as concerned about that as many people are, but I do think it's a big question going into the year. Number two for me, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me here, but I think running back is a question mark going into the year. I feel good about Russell Hansbrough, but he's never been the guy at Mizzou. And until he proves that he can be, I'm going to at least have questions about that. And number three for me is the defensive backs. Who's going to shut down the opponent's number one wide receiver? Who's going to be EJ Gaines going into the Texas A&M game against Mike Evans and just shuts him down for like 12 yards in the entire game? Who's going to be that guy? Because that's something that Mizzou's desperately going to need as they play teams like Georgia and they play teams like Texas A&M once again and Tennessee, who always has some good receivers. And obviously South Carolina is going to be stacked on offense this year as well. They're going to need those D-backs to step up. Those are my probably three biggest question marks going into the year. But things that I feel really good about, I think, outweigh the question marks. I feel really good about the offensive line going into this season. I feel really good about Matty Mock going into this season. I think the defensive line, I've been saying it for months now, I think the D-line's going to be better than it was last year. The only question there is, can Charles Harris and Marcus Loud be as good in that second unit as Shane Ray and Marcus Golden were last year? And if they can, then I don't think you have any concerns about the defensive line. So I feel really good about this team. And in the first 4 weeks, they should be 4-0. And then right the next 3 weeks after those four games against South Dakota State, Toledo, UCF, and Indiana, you've got three games that should determine the fate of Mizzou's season. If they can find a way to win two of three against South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, I think this team has a very real chance of winning the SEC East for the second year in a row. Now, if they don't do that, then we can reevaluate the expectations at that point in time. But all you need really is two of three. And if you can get that, I really do think that Mizzou could be the team that wins the SEC East this year, especially when you have South Carolina that has to play Auburn from the SEC West. That's not going to be an easy game for them. That's going to be a really, really, really tough game for South Carolina. They also have Texas A&M to start the year. They obviously have to play against Mizzou. Their schedule, not easy. Schedule's not easy at all. I think Mizzou could find a way to make it into that SEC title game once again. I am Brandon Kiley. The show is The Morning Blitz. Appreciate you all for joining me today. We're going to hear from the assistant coaches after practice here in just about an hour or so. I will bring that audio to you here tomorrow on The Morning Blitz. Reed Foster's next with The Fix.